We are the Bros Who Think Network, and you're tuned into Bros Who Binge. Enjoy.
What's up, movie fans and Netflix bingers? This is the Bros Who Binge podcast. My name is Adam Schubert, and as always, I'm joined by Lyndon Burton. We're getting ready to talk some movies, man. This is a big weekend for both of us. I mean, are you going to catch Aquaman this weekend?
Oh, most def. Bought the tick today.
Yeah. So we not only did Spider-Verse come out and Mortal Engines come out, we're getting to see Aquaman this weekend. Big, big movie weekend for us.
Yes, it is. Episode 20. Glad to be back, Shuby. Excited to talk Mortal Engines. Excited to watch Aquaman later in the week. And also got to catch Spider-Man at some point this week because you watched it. Yeah. I watched Mortal Engines. I didn't get a chance to do a double feature because I had some dinner plans. It was my lady friend and sister's B-Day, so I had to go do that. But we caught a late show on the Mortal Engines. So
yeah, I feel like I've been in a movie theater all day. That day went, but I had one of the crazier movie experiences for me.
What happened?
Okay, so I'm in Spider-Verse or whatever, and so I first get into Spider-Verse, there's no one there, and I'm thinking to myself, this is a crime. Like, this is supposed to be a great movie. I'm here at I was there at 6 o'clock, you know, a reasonable time for people to be there. No one was in there. Okay, so people start filing in as the previews come in, which is not unusual, and some people go behind me. I'm not really paying attention because I'm watching previews. And we get halfway through this Spider-Man movie and we kind of get to, like, not a lull in action because it's pretty action-packed, but, like, just a quieter time where there's more talking and less fighting. Mm-hmm. And I'm hearing, like, sex noises from behind me. Like, at first, it's just, like, little tiny, like, squeaks and squeals, and I'm thinking, oh, this is probably, you know, some, like, kids back there, probably, like, you know, doing some hand stuff, like, no big deal.
Some hand stuff.
But, I mean, like, it just progressively, like, you know, I was like, okay, it'll be all right, I don't need to move or anything, but, like, a couple minutes go on, and it just seemed like it progressively was getting louder, and, like, I just started to feel like, there was just some rustling around going on over there. And I'm just like, man, like, what is going on? And I almost wanted to tap the guy in front of me and be like, are you hearing this? Like, do we do something? Like, do I need to, like, get out of the vicinity? Like, am I in splash zone? Like, I did not know what was going on. Like, that it was crazy. I was trying to pay attention to the movie because the movie was so good. And, I wanted to be able to talk about it. But, I mean, that was just a little bit distracting, man, you know?
So when they really have things in movies.
I don't know what was going on, but I mean, like, I know that when it was all said and done, there was people, like, they stood up, like, they were, I don't know, like, there was stuff going on back there. And so, you know, what age do you think these people were?
Wait, first, because I know you're probably saying the age because it's going to shock us.
Yeah.
First, why didn't you look back? Like, my ass is looking around. Like,
bro, I'm not looking back, dude. I just did not want to, like, make eye contact, I guess.
Okay, so were they, like, 18?
No, man. They were, like, it was one dude with, like, a silver-haired mullet and, like, his crazy, eccentric,
older lady wife
that was, like, dancing her way down after the movie was over, like, booty shaking.
And they had sex to Spider-Verse.
I'm pretty sure they did have sex in Spider-Verse. It was one of the more crazier movie-going experiences for me. That's for sure. I switched theaters for Mortal Engines.
You're like, fuck that. I'm getting out of here. That's hilarious. But Shuby, man, we got a lot to get into. Oh, whenever you're ready, I am ready.
All right, now that we got that out of the way, let's go. All right, so as usual, it's either Star Wars or DC, and some big news came out with The Mandalorian, so I definitely want to talk about it. An expanded cast for the Disney Plus series has been unveiled, And there's some notable new additions. Giancarlo Espinoso, who's, you know, most notably in Breaking Bad. Emily Swallow, who was in Supernatural, a show that I didn't really watch. Carl Weathers, you know, Apollo Creed, man. He's going to be in Star Wars. And Omid Abtah from American Gods. I know you watched that show. And
yes.
Werner Herzog, who's known, I'd say, more for what he does behind the camera, but he's also a very good actor.
Interesting. Out of those names, the things that excite me the most are Giancarlo Esposito and Carl Weathers. Like, is Carl Weathers going to be an alien? Is Giancarlo going to be an alien? Are they going to be
older guys?
Are they going to be old Mandalorians? Like, are they going to be part of the crew that's for Nick Nolte? Like I feel like Omid might be an alien, maybe Warner, maybe even Emily Swallow, but maybe Giancarlo or Carl Weathers might be part of that crew with Nick Nolte that you were talking about, the old man crew, the old man Mandalorian, like, old vanguard.
Yeah, I really wish one of them could just, like, be a clone. I know it's impossible, but yeah. I just wish one of them was a clone. That'd be cool.
Out of all of those, it would probably have to be Giancarlo.
It would have to be. I just don't know if he even fits that description. Yeah. But, yeah, Carl Weathers, super cool. Omid Abtah has Star Wars ties. He was in the Clone Wars TV series.
Who did he play?
He played Amis, who I assume was on Mandalore, because he also played the roles of Mandalorian Super Commando and Cadet Amis, which was the same character. So, and that was two episodes, so probably a two-episode arc in the Mandalore time. So I think he's a character that is tied with Filoni and tied with the Mandalore characters that have been established in the Clone Wars. So I think that was a really interesting casting and maybe something that we need to look into. I don't know if you remember him on American Gods. That's what I was curious about.
Let me see. I need to pull him up. But what I was thinking that while you were saying that was, do you think there's a chance that he maybe plays his character? Oh, okay, yes, I do remember him from from American God. He is the taxi driver who is trying to get involved with the genie. He has relationships with the genie, and he's trying to become one of the djinns. I know exactly who this is. Yeah, and he's walking around with dead wife. For those who watch American Gods, they understand the reference that when I say dead wife. But no, he's a great actor, and he could definitely pull off. He could be a clone.
Yeah, he easily could be.
So, I mean, it's either him or Giancarlo, but I it would be interesting to see him.
I don't think he reprises the character because it was, you know, on the Clone Wars. That's a little bit too far back. He's a little bit younger looking of a guy.
But in sense of being another Mandalorian troop, that's possible. Because you got to think Mandalorians have a very, even though this is space and there's not races, there are races among the humanoids. And Mandalorians look a certain way, and he kind of fits that vibe of what a Mandalorian
he does.
And out of all the actors that are here, it's him and Giancarlo Esposito.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think they're more fit that bill. Weathers and Herzog, I think, are going to be part of that old man crew, like we've been saying.
And then Emily Swallow is just an older Caucasian woman. So,
you know, and I think it's important also to mention that Werner Herzog does do stuff behind the camera and has done some, you know, he's done like Jack Reacher and other action movies. So I think maybe having him as another voice in the background is also beneficial to the film.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with that completely. Yeah.
But I'm super excited about all these castings. I want to hear more and more. They actually even got a showrunner for Diego Luna's TV series. I don't really remember his name. It wasn't a big name guy. So
it'll
be interesting to see how things go forward with that, but I assume that we're definitely going to be focusing on the Mandalorian as we get closer to Star Wars Celebration.
Yeah, it seems like Star Wars Celebration is going to be all Mandalorian, all episode nine.
Yeah.
We're probably going to have, we might get a Mandalorian trailer come Celebration.
Yeah, I think we probably would get something. They're probably going to start filming that pretty soon.
Yeah, and you got to think it comes out.
I don't think we'd get like a full trailer, but I think we'd get a teaser or something.
Schubert, when is Celebration? May?
May.
So you got to think, The Mandalorian comes out like 4 or 5 months later. That's
Around the same time as 9, so yeah, I guess that's 9 probably have something too.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We 9, I assume we get our teaser before, if not before the year ends, at least around Super Bowl time, we'll get a teaser for it, and then probably around Celebration, we'll get a full-on trailer for 9, and then probably we'll get our first look at the Mandalorian.
Yeah, I assume so, but like saying that, I also... I'm trying to say that we probably won't be hearing as much from the Diego Luna series just
yet. Oh yeah, no, for sure. I agree with that 2,000%. I think
maybe a few castings, but like I don't think we're gonna get too much details until after Celebration's over.
If anything at Celebration, they might bring up the showrunner and Diego Luna and just have them talk. That's it. I agree with you. I think it's too early in that. I think Celebration's focus is Episode 9. Mandalorian and Clone Wars, and then
I could totally see them coming into Celebration and being like, okay, you know, we have the showrunner, we have Diego Luna, and then you know maybe cast two more people, mid-named people, big-name people, however what direction they're trying to go with it, just to kind of throw some more excitement around there. Yeah. I want to see like one more name there, because like with Mandalorian we have Pascal. And I mean, Carl Weathers is a pretty big name in my opinion.
Nick Nolte
is a big name. So
and Esposito's become a big name at post Breaking Bad.
And heck, if you look at the directors too, you have Bryce Dallas Howard and Taika Waititi joining this group. So
and don't forget Rick Famuyiwa. So yeah, no, Star Wars Celebration, we got to keep our eyes going forward. But that's not the only major Disney story we got on the horizon, my friend.
No, I mean, we got a very tasteful Avengers trailer.
Yes,
it's going to be called Avengers Endgame, and it was very, very tasteful. I liked it a lot more than Captain Marvel's trailer.
Look, I will say this. I will applaud Marvel because they held Sony's foot to the fire. They said, all right, you can go to Brazil, show Jake Gyllenhaal, show whatever you're going to show. But y'all not releasing that now. Not by Avengers Endgame, and I'm glad... whatever happened, whether Marvel told Sony not to, Sony just didn't. Whatever happened, I'm glad they didn't release that Spider-Man trailer, because in the Avengers Endgame trailer, you specifically see Peter Parker, and under his face, you see deceased. And yeah. That would have really shocked us after I just saw that amazing trailer, and a day later, I see Spider-Man. But nonetheless, that didn't happen. Rumor is Spider-Man will come before the year ends, so we will see that very soon. But Avengers Endgame, bro, why did Nebula leave Tony in space?
Why did who?
Nebula? Leave Tony in space.
Well, she don't care about him.
Everybody's saying that that's how we're going to get Captain Marvel. Because I don't know if
That makes the most sense.
I don't know if you listen to the Bros Who Think podcast, the beginning part, but... Me, Cam, and Brooklyn were like, I told Cam, I was like, I don't know how Captain Marvel fits into this movie. I really don't. Like, I see...
Really?
Let me pitch to you. You pretty much know my pitch. It is the old Avengers. It's Ant-Man going back in time, assembling the Affinity Gauntlet to have their gauntlet to battle Thanos while Thanos is chasing them throughout time. Cameron had a good theory that maybe Hulk and Captain Marvel are fighting off Thanos while the Avengers are doing this, the OG Avengers. But I like what the internet's been saying after some time sitting on it, that Captain Marvel's kind of who brings Tony to Earth, and that's kind of how we get her. And then maybe Cam's theory might be correct, where while the old Avengers are going back in time, we need our two boss Hulks to fight Thanos to keep him at bay while the people can assemble their Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was kind of leaning with that, with Captain Marvel's arrival. That's exactly what I got out of the trailer, that she's probably going to be the one to catch Tony's distress call on her way to Earth. I don't really... The trailer doesn't really give you a lot to go off of, which is great.
No, it's awesome.
So, like, it's really hard for me to talk about because there are just a lot of little moments, but I don't really know what to grasp onto because I don't really know what I'm grabbing onto yet.
Because if you remember the Infinity War trailer, it turns out that one of the biggest moments of that trailer isn't even in the movie.
Exactly.
But and one of the big... Oh, no, go ahead, Schubert. I didn't mean to cut you
off. No, I mean, some of it could be deleted scenes that they're just showing to have a trailer.
Yeah, exactly. Because Marvel has shown that they're not going to show their cards unless they have to. And what I was going to say is, I'm going to say something that's funny, and then I'm going to go into some speculation. But one of the things that I really enjoyed was seeing Thanos' armor on the little, as a scarecrow.
The scarecrow.
Yeah, I was just thinking, thank you, next. Like, Thanos is like, thank you, next. Thanos is done, bro. He's chilling. He's planting his marijuana, and he's, thank you, next.
Yeah, man. Like, that's the one thing I'm the most curious about with the trailer, where you're wondering how Captain Marvel ties, and I'm like, you know, Thanos is over here not doing anything. You know, what's going to get him all riled up?
Oh, it's them going up. And Thanos is, I really feel like Thanos is going to be chasing them the entire movie. And then they're going to have a big battle at the end.
But I almost hope not. I hope they, like, send him off. Maybe, like, what you're saying with Captain Marvel and the Hulk. Maybe, like, distracting him or something. Mm-hmm. You know, like, sending him off on, like, the wrong direction.
No, yeah, but that's what I'm saying. He's going to be going, trying to get to him. They're going to hold him off. Then they're going to assemble their gauntlet, and it's probably going to be battle. Hulk might put the gauntlet on. It might be Captain Marvel. We even seen Black Panther put the gauntlet on. But if I'm going to bet my money, it's probably going to either be Captain Marvel or maybe Hulk.
I would throw Captain America in there, too. And Thor.
Ooh, you say Captain America, Thor? I don't know, man. Maybe.
I think, you know, it could be something that could ultimately kill Captain America, and that could be, like, his going out.
Also, I said this. I said, if they do this in this movie, because everybody's like, well, we're ending the Thanos chapter, they have to open a new chapter. And a lot of people are hoping they go Galactus since they acquired Fox. A lot of people are hoping they go Kang.
I want Dr. Doom.
Dr. Doom. A lot of people hoping Kang the Conqueror. But I say all of those things, let that be in the future. And the easiest way to get us to Dr. Doom, Galactus, and Kang is through the Skrulls. We don't have to go back out to Adam Warlock. We don't have to go back to that Guardian stuff. Let that stuff die. But let's bring Captain Marvel and do the Skrulls. And you turn, and if at the end of this movie we find out one of our Avengers is a Skrull, and keep it Earth-based, let the aliens be here, and we do more like what you say. Now that we have all our IP, we can focus in on New York. We can bring the Fantastic Four in and do space that way. Have them as the Skrulls and do a Secret Wars. Like we said last week, the Russo brothers already said they're not doing another Marvel movie unless it's Secret Wars. This is a perfect way to bring that up with Captain Marvel.
Yeah, I think our conversation last week about the Captain Marvel trailer and the Skrulls, you really kind of bought me in on that. I think if we're going to see anything from this Captain Marvel movie, we're going to learn a lot more about them. And if we don't, then I'm going to be thoroughly upset, because I think that you're right. They should play a more major part. And this should be not only an introduction to Captain Marvel and her character, but an introduction to the new Skrulls villain. as a villain.
Exactly.
And, I think it would be really bad if they do the typical Marvel thing and don't put enough into the villain.
No, and what better way, like, you started off with Killmonger. You gave us the villain that we can believe. You gave us the Magneto-esque villain, the Earthling that we can relate to. Then you gave us Thanos, the dictator that's doing it for, he believes 100%. Some people may think his means may be right, but the way he's going about it isn't right. So even to him, he's a great villain. What a better way than to escalate that on top of, you already went as big, big, big picture as world-ending conquering. Why not bring it close to home, to where the villain is so impactful to where you don't know if you can trust your fellow Avenger? That's the only, like, what, like, why do another Conqueror? Why do another World Eater? You've done that. Why not bring it close to home and make it real emotional, to where the Iron Avengers can't even look at each other in the face because they don't know if they're a Skrull or not? To me, that's perfect.
Yeah, I mean, that would get me energized for the next phase of Marvel.
Yes, that's refreshing. That allows us to Marvel to do a new way, and that also allows us to bring the X-Men in. I have a pitch for that. Like, it makes you believe a lot more, because now it's like, whoa, I don't know who anybody is, because anybody could be a Skrull.
And then you make the argument anyone could be a mutant sort of deal. So, exactly. I mean, like, it kind of changes the entire world that we know it in that universe, which is really interesting.
100%. I agree with
that. Yeah.
And then, you know, the major Skrull villain, which I don't know if Marvel has, the ultimate Skrull, the dude who ends up being the major leader is Super Skrull. And Super Skrull's powers is... it's Super Skrull, yes. I know.
Oh, my God.
Yes, yes.
Laugh How original.
No, 100%. I'm not going to even clown. But he has... His power is he has... Not only can he shapeshift, but he has control of the entire Fantastic Four's power frames. He can Ooh. Stretch his arm and have Thing's fist with Johnny's fire on it. While doing an invisible shield. Like, he's crazy. So that's right, a perfect way to bring in Fantastic Four.
Before we move to the next story, top three choices of who is a Skrull.
Oh, all right. Let's see. I'm going Cap number one.
Oh, man.
What a better way to recast.
That would be crazy.
What a better way to recast Captain America, Chris Evans, and then now if you kill him, it's more acceptable because he's a Skrull.
Oh, my gosh.
And wouldn't that flip Marvel on its head?
Yeah, totally.
That's one that I believe. I don't think Thor's a Skrull. I'm gonna go Chris Evans
no,
number one.
Thor is definitely not a Skrull, 100%.
I think Thor and Robert Downey Jr. both are not Skrulls. But if Chris Evans isn't a Skrull and they don't choose him, Robert Downey Jr. is my other half of that first coin because I think it would be interesting to have either one of those as the Skrull. Like I think
so. Your number one option for your first option is a tie between the two top characters in Marvel. Okay,
but I'm
one of them is going to be a Skrull. Is what you're saying?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. But I'm leaning more towards Chris Evans because I think that would be more impactful than having Tony Stark as your Skrull because it sends a bad message if Tony Stark is a Skrull because he's the first one we've ever seen. But it also makes that somebody could say that makes it more impactful because that means the whole Marvel universe was built on. A Skrull, which is crazy.
Yeah, I don't think they're gonna do that either. I think Tony's pretty untouchable here. Thor, I think, is untouchable on account that he's a god.
Same, I agree with that.
I think you can fake that.
Yeah.
I'm leaning that none of the Guardians are gonna be Skrulls.
I'm leaning that way as well. I kind of think Black Widow could be a Skrull.
I think.
Or Hawkeye.
I think Black Widow and Scarlet Witch are probably in my top three.
Okay, I could believe it. See, Scarlet Witch, no, I'm not. Because Scarlet Witch, we know she was created in that lab. And I think, I think they're going to save Scarlet Witch to explain mutants.
Okay, that's fine. Especially because her brother was Quicksilver. And
now that they have Fox's rights, they can bring in their father. Like
Magneto.
Their father's Magneto, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, you're good. Yeah.
But I think if anybody's a Skrull, I think they're gonna make it close to SHIELD. Nick Fury could be a Skrull.
Oh, that would be great.
We could find that out in Captain Marvel.
That would be fantastic.
Like that's why he doesn't act like you know how you like why isn't that not acting like Nick Fury? What if that was never the real Nick Fury?
Yeah, I love that. And especially because he's, like, died so many times.
Yep.
Yeah, that's great. That would be perfect.
That's my number two option. And number three, I mean, I think it's, like I said, it's the human. It's either Black Widow, Hawkeye, one of them. That's my top three. But my top three all comes from the SHIELD family because I think that impacts it more because you can't make Black Panther a Skrull.
No, I was going to say can't make a Wakandan a Skrull.
You can't make Spider-Man a Skrull, not only because it's Spider-Man, but you don't own him fully. Like, Sony will be like, what are you doing? We'll take that away right away. And Doctor Strange is the one that perplexes me because I don't know.
I don't think he can be a Skrull.
See, I'm with you, but he could, Schubert, like, maybe. Like, you know, like, but you're right.
Well, yeah, we don't know the Skrull's powers. So that's the thing. Like, I really want Captain Marvel. Like, that's after all of our conversation with this, I don't really care about Captain Marvel's story. I care more about what's going on in her world.
Yeah.
Like, who's she battling? Like, that's the thing that I hate about what they're doing with Captain Marvel is like, this movie is such a lead up to the Avengers Endgame that no one is really like focused on the character.
And that's the thing. That's why I say she's going to have the Thor appeal. Where even though Ragnarok was a great movie due to Taika Waititi, and Captain Marvel might be a great movie as well, but everything that I love about Thor, I remember from Infinity War, but I credit it to Ragnarok. And it's like, the axe stuff is not in Ragnarok. That is in Infinity War. All my, like, Thor coming into the battlefield like a badass. Like, all my favorite Thor humor. Some of that's from Infinity War. So I think she's going to have that same thing where people are going to say, oh, she was great in Captain Marvel, but really what she was great in was Endgame.
Yeah, I mean, I think you kind of gave your reasoning for why Thor, you like Thor so much in Infinity Wars, because we hadn't had a good Thor movie, and Taika Waititi finally figured it out on how to give Hemsworth a direction to give us the Thor that we needed in a solo movie and in Avengers. I think that had a huge part on how to do with that. So I give Ragnarok way more credit.
No, I feel that. But before we get off of Endgame, because I know we're spinning long on this, I want to mention two characters. And speaking on our guy Thor, I think we're going to see, now that we've gotten Thor humor, I think we're about to see Chris Hemsworth. If he can pull it off, what I'm thinking, I think Thor is going to be my favorite Avenger. If Thor is in the depths of despair because he came so close to killing Thanos and ending it, he was that close. And if we see Thor just beating himself up, because he was already beating himself up in Infinity War because he lost Loki. Now now another chunk of the Asgardians are gone. Not only did you lose a lot before the snap, now you lost even more, and you're the reason why half the universe is gone, because if you would have aimed for the head, Thanos would have been dead. I want to see Thor just beating himself up. I want to see Chris Hemsworth hit.
Star-Lord better beat himself up.
Star-Lord's dead, bro.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, Star-Lord's dead. These are the main Avengers, and the other one I want to mention is Hawkeye. I love the Ronin suit. That is anime to the core. That is ninja. That's super spy. Oh, man, the Matt Fraction Hawkeye run, all that stuff. I love. And give me more Ronin. I want to see him where I want Thor to be beating himself up. I want Hawkeye to just be a megalomaniac killer. Like, he's just running around killing niggas because he's mad that his family's gone.
Damn, yeah, that'd be awesome.
Like, I want this, like, if we're going to make this Endgame, because you've been teasing it for so long, you can go back to Civil War. Tony said, up there, space, that's the Endgame. Doctor Strange, we're playing for the Endgame. They've been teasing this for a while. Let's make it the full crescendo to the opening arc of the Marvel Universe. This is officially the closing chapter of the official book one, I guess you would say. This would kind of be book one, or like the first part of the series. Now we're about to get to the second part, post-Endgame.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think we can go on and on about this because it's just so exciting. I mean, we're so close.
No, you're absolutely right. But with that being said, let's jump on into our weekly Titans review. Our guy, Schubert, is caught up. Schubert, before we review this week's episode, what'd you think of last week's episode, the Donna Troy episode?
Yeah, it was super hype.
Did I hype it up enough?
Yeah, I think so. You hit all the high points pretty well. I really liked the Donna Troy cameo. I felt like it worked pretty well. And I don't think it was, too overbearing. I think we did get a lot from Rachel and her mom. We didn't get, like you said, we didn't get a lot, but I felt like it was enough.
It was emotional stuff we got.
And, like, seeing from what we're going to get in the next episode, we're going to get even more of it. So, like, I feel like we got a good lead up.
Yeah. What did you think about the Wonder Woman stuff? How Dick and Donna don't have a romantic... This is the first female that he's not romantically tied to.
Yeah, I mean, I think their dynamic's good. He needs someone like that, someone who's there for him.
Like a sister. But,
and, like, there's no strings.
Yeah.
Because, like, even with Batman, there's strings. Expectations and loyalties.
Even with Dawn, it's like there's that tension. With Starfire, there's going to be that tension. Like,
and they even kind of talked about it. I don't remember if it's the most recent episode or the episode. Yeah, I think it was two episodes back where, like, Beast Boy and Raven are like, so
what's up with you and Dick?
Dick and Corey.
Yeah. No, even the young boys are starting to realize it. So, I mean, yes. We could go on about this Donna Troy episode, but even the Batmobile, like, oh, I love everything about Titans. But let's get into the newest episode. This is the let me pull up the episode name. But this is the episode where we get into Hawk and Dove's backstory, essentially. This is episode 9, Hank and Dove. Whereas episode 2 was Hawk and Dove.
Yeah, we've talked about it, how this episode's a little bit misplaced.
Yes.
Just because of where we are in the action of our heroes. But I did not think it was a bad episode.
No, not at all.
You know, I've loved the backstory for Hank. Like, I guess love is kind of a twisted way to say it, but I just thought it really dove into how he became who he was and what he was before, and he kind of was kind of this jerky kind of person, and what kind of drives him as a hero, and what is where his biggest hatred lies. And I thought it was really important to learn that.
No, I agree with you 200%. I also love the fact that they didn't take any they weren't scared to take risks or pull punches, and they talked on a story that at least in the male community, if you play sports, it's taboo to think that your coach is going to molest you. But post Sandusky, post all that stuff, it's apparent in our culture, and it's something that goes on countless, that these little boys don't get chances to even like talk about it. Like, and this is, I'm glad that this was a topic of the show. Like, it needed to be like discussed.
Well, yeah, and I just felt like that was also a great way to show you a hero's origin of how he had a traumatic experience that drove him to become who he was.
Yeah, and on the flip side, I love how him and Dawn, you saw that their relationship, they weren't necessarily lovers. They weren't necessarily people that was, ooh, these two superhero people love each other, and they're fighting crime, and it's a happy story. No, they were brought together through turmoil of them both losing someone they love, and not
at the same time.
At the same time, and not having an outlet for it. Dawn, on one hand, her mother is being abused, and she and her sister left that situation. Her mom keeps going back to it, and she doesn't understand why her mom keeps doing that. Where Hank, his brother, is blaming himself for why Hank is like he is, because Hank saved his brother from being the one who was so. And they're both in their way messed up, and they both lose one of the most important people in their life, if not the most important people, at the same time. So it just allows for them to be the most important person in each other's lives at that moment.
Yeah, I mean, it really dives into how they feel connected to one another and how their bond is so special. And because, I mean, I think maybe some people questioned their relationship a little bit for the first time we met them, because we didn't know enough about them. But, I mean, now it's, you know, unquestionable.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, I mean, they're a team. They're a unit.
No, they are. They're one. Like, you don't get just Hawk or you don't get just Dove. You get both of them. And
they need each other in different ways.
Yes, 100%. Like, they're the yin and the yang. Together, they make a perfect union. Separately, they're missing something. Mm-hmm. And to your point about where this episode's placed, yeah, man, you can't just go from a cliffhanger with Donna Troy to this. But in the way they tried to connect it with Raven, like, Hank, we need you. Like, that was all right. But I would have much rather, after episode 2, when Dawn falls and you see Hank say no, and Hank's just on the ground crying, and you just see him think about, and it just goes flashback, and it's the origin episode. It would have impacted much more after the initial injury, and I know you'd have to change some stuff around, but I don't know, man. And it's not, like you said, it's not a bad episode. It's just after the Donna Troy episode, you want to get to this Coriander episode, which is next.
I mean, she's got her neck on Rachel's throat.
Like, how isn't she dead by now, you know?
Yeah,
some should have popped off.
Yeah.
Wait, not to cut you off. Why is Jason Todd coming back in the show?
Yeah, I was going to address that because I wanted to talk a little bit about what you were saying, where Rachel was popping up in this, I guess, dreamscape memories for Dawn in her coma.
Well, she tried to do it to Hank first, but he was drunk.
Yeah, I get that. I don't know if that was actually Hank. I was really confused at the very end when Don woke up, if we were looking through Hank's memories through Hank or if we were looking through Hank's memories through Don.
No, what happened was at first it was Hank. Like at first when it was like the little boy and everything, that was through Hank. And that was when Raven was in his dreams. But then it switches when we learn about Dawn. Like we see them come together through Dawn. We don't see that through Hank. All we see through Hank is everything leading up to like right up when him and his brother first become Hawk and Dove. And then when they stop, it goes to Dawn.
And so do you think that this is Rachel reaching out to them?
Yeah, that was them, her making a plea to try to get somebody to help her.
And, like, where do you think this lies in that timeline? You think this is, like, her doing this, like, right as Corey's attacking them?
Yeah, probably so.
And that's a crazy move for Rachel.
And I think they wake up right as whatever happens right when we see the movie. Like, right in the movie. Right when the new episode starts. That's when Dawn's like, come on, Hank, we got to go find Jason Todd.
Yeah, I mean, what's Jason Todd got to do with any of this?
To me, what I think Jason Todd's for, and this is the only thing I can explain, other than setting him up to potentially be Red Hood some more, like, they're just really driving in, like, Red Hood will be a villain of this show. Don't you worry. But
well, I think by securing more airtime for Jason Todd, that's set.
Yeah, no, for sure, 100%. But I think the reason why they bring him back is maybe to help Dick get a Nightwing suit. Because I don't know how Dick's gonna get that. I don't know how they're gonna explain that unless like Donna is just some magic seamstress. Like Donna don't have no money to make that Kevlar suit. Like and Dick burns his other one. I think that's the only thing I could think Jason Todd's helping doing.
Yeah, that's funny because she was like, man, that's expensive. Exactly. When he was like, you burned your suit.
She was like, you don't just do that. You could have reused it.
Yeah. Jeez.
So, but that's pretty much all we have really for this episode. Schubert, what do you rate Hank and Dawn? 1 through 5.
Yeah, I probably would rate this at a solid 4.
Yeah, I'm not going to give it a 3 because
it's a bad episode. It's just like we want to see something else.
I don't blame the episode. I don't blame the writing of it, the script or anything. I blame who put the structure of episodes in order. Because granted, you had to do this episode, but it's like, are you doing this right before the show's about to end? Like, why didn't we do this before we met Hank? Like, I don't know, man. You could have did this when we first met Hawk and Dove.
Well,
opinions may be different after we see Coriander.
And the reason I put it at 4 also is, you know, I feel like what is his name? Alec Rickman? It's not Rickman. It's
Richman.
Richman. I think he's doing a terrific job in this. And I was so skeptical about him because the only thing I really knew him as was Thad Castle, and I think he's doing great. I think that they made that character perfect because I didn't know anything about Hawk and Dove, and I'm so invested in them.
No, I agree. I couldn't agree with you more. I'm going to give it a 4 as well because, like I said, I'm not going to give it a 3, and I'm not going to give it a 3 point something because the episode was great. They are Hawk and Dove. And the Hawk and Dove that I knew in the cartoon was from World War II, but they made this realistic and fit into today. And like you said, everybody was wanting Alan Rickman to be Shazam. I'm so happy that he's Hawk. He plays a great, gritty vigilante that has a heart of gold underneath. I really loved him. And shout out to
Billy Batson. Billy Batson really isn't kind of like a bad, cocky jock guy, but Hawk is.
Yeah, Hawk.
And so I feel like he plays that better. But yeah, Mika Kelly's doing good too.
No, she like I love her. Like the thing is, the reason why I think they work so well is because Alan Rickman is that guy that like bros really want to relate to. But Mika Kelly, when I watch her, she gives me such a calming sensation, like a calming vibe when she's on screen. Like she's kind of, I would say, if they become the Titans, like if they really become the Titans and all of them are together in season 2 and they're fighting crime together. Minka Kelly's going to be the mom of the team.
Oh, Minka Kelly, man, trying to run around with old Tim Riggins.
You know, that's the thing. Minka Kelly's going to be the mom, and Starfire's the crazy aunt that's, like, protecting everybody. I thought Starfire was going to be the mom, but no, she's more of an aunt. Like, she's having sex with Robin. She's doing the damn thing, baby.
I feel that, man. I feel that.
No, but 100%. But that's our Titans review. Can't wait to watch Coriander next week and give you guys that. But in the world of DC, we got a lot of news. Schubert, I'm going to go through each of these three things, and we'll talk about each of them. First up,
all right.
Plastic Man movie. The classic DC Comics hero Plastic Man is getting a big screen treatment. Up-and-coming screenwriter Amanda Adoko has been hired to pen the script for what will be a comedic action adventure for Warner Brothers. Bob Shea, the former co-founder of New Line, term producer, will executive produce. Plastic Man wasn't initially a DC character, having been created by Jack Cole for Quality Comics in 1941 when Quality went under. DC bought many of those characters, Plastic Man among them. The hero's true identity is Patrick L. O'Brien, a crook-turned-good guy. O'Brien was part of a gang during a botched heist, is shot, and wouldn't you know it, also douched in a chemical lab, and he becomes left for dead by the gang. He awakens to find himself imbued with power to shapeshift, stretch his body into almost anything. Thanks to being the most malleable man alive, O'Brien reforms and becomes a police officer. And the character is kind of the comic among the Justice League. And pretty much he kind of reforms. Batman really helps him. Batman and him kind of have a good relationship because Batman was the one that was capturing him when he was a crook. So I don't know if they're going to tie that Batman element in, but that's something that could be done.
And speaking of... You would think this is going to come after the Batman... Oh, yeah. You're about to say.
Exactly. Speaking of... the Batman, everybody's like, bro, they're announcing Birds of Prey, they're announcing Flash, they're announcing Plastic Man. Like, what is going on with Batman? Ladies and gentlemen, we got an update courtesy of Humberto Gonzalez, our guy, the ace scooper at The Wrap. Shout out to El Mayembe. We love you, brother. Matt Reeves' script rewrite is due before the end of the year. Yes, Matt Reeves is finally, he has to turn in his rewrite to the Batman script before January 1st. Before January 1st, and they think it should be in probably before Christmas. So probably between the 16th and the 24th, I assume it's going to be in, and then we'll have some word. All right,
so next week.
Yeah, we'll have some word probably after the new year. But also, the final bit of news in DC is, for that Birds of Prey movie, we have a new villain cast. Chris Messina has joined Birds of Prey as Victor Zsasz. That's courtesy of Deadline. So, Schubert, let's start off with Plastic Man because I think that's the easiest topic to talk about. And it's the one that's like, all right, I don't think this movie's coming anytime soon, but cool. I'm excited about it. It lets DC touch another, like, genre where Marvel has Ant-Man. This is the perfect counter to Ant-Man.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I always get Plastic Man and Elongated Man mixed up.
Yeah, Elongated Man's more of the detective scientist where Plastic
Man... And he's with Flash.
Yeah, where Plastic Man's the thief comedian.
Yeah.
He's Scott Lang, essentially.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting who they get to cast, and it seems like DC's really starting to get that comedic lighter tone. We'll see how their comedy lands in comparison to Marvel's comedy. Because we're already getting the very comedic Shazam, and from what I'm gathering from this Aquaman news that
getting leaked,
is that it's not that dark. It's pretty lighthearted with comedy.
Yeah.
Plastic Man, I've heard that. What's this guy? The
Ben
guy
Schwartz.
Ben Schwartz, Ralph Macchio or whatever. John Ralphio, dude, from Parks and Rec. Yeah,
Wants to play Plastic Man.
I think he looks like he could play Plastic Man. I just don't know if, you know,
he could pull off the action, but
yeah, if he could pull it off. Know. But you know, I'm glad there's people who are interested in the role.
Yeah, facts, and you never know who could be a superhero. Because like, look, nobody thought Zach Levi was Shazam.
Oh, he's doing great. And like I've been watching Maisel right now, and he's doing great on Maisel. So 100%. I'm so excited for Zach Levi.
Well, the next part of the news I want to talk about, let's get the Batman stuff out the way. It's about time, because I didn't know what was going on with Matt Reeves. Like, this needs to hurry up and happen. Like, yes, we don't want to rush it. And also, this is a good thing, because they're making sure they give us the best possible Batman. They do not want to flop the Batman movie. So that's the good news. But me as a Batman fan, I'm like, bro, I'm so ready for Maverick. I don't care about Ben Affleck. If he's not going to be Batman, cool. Get him out of here. Let's just get this show on the road. And we finally are getting this show on the road.
I feel like what I like about this news with Matt Reeves is, yeah, like you're saying, we're getting the show on the road. But all three of these stories have Gotham connections. And I feel like we're starting to kind of
build the universe.
Get our universe together. We're building our Gotham universe right now. We're going to get Plastic Man, Batman, Birds of Prey. You know, we're going to do a Flash movie that's going to introduce that. We'll see what we get out of that. You know, if the Flash movie is successful, we could see Flash with Elongated Man eventually, or we could see, you know, multiple Flashes. I don't know, whatever they want to do, because that Flash show's got me thinking they can do anything.
And Titans has got me thinking they can connect. You see, when DC does it right, there's so many ties that they can do and get it right. And like you said, they're building their movie universe slowly. And if Aquaman is a success like everybody's hearing, that's also another connection, because I know they're showing some of that Atlantis stuff, connecting Atlantis to Wonder Woman. And that would be dope. Amber Heard's already talking about how she wants to team up with Wonder Woman. And Mara would be dope with Wonder Woman.
That'd be cool. And now that we've set up those two worlds, we can also do one of those crazy offshoot Justice League Elseworld movies, because we are doing Elseworlds.
Yeah. So there's a lot that they could do. Also, I think now that we've shown that if Aquaman is successful, it shows that DC can go, like you said, away from the Batman Superman, and maybe we can finally give Green Lantern another shot. Because yes, Guardians in the Galaxy and what Marvel does in space is cool, but when you really get the big dogs out, aka the Green Lanterns, and you finally see the Yellow Lantern Corps, the Red Lantern Corps, because if Jeff Johns, because I don't want to mispronounce your name, legendary, pay respects to the god Jeff Johns, Blackest Night, I'm a fan. If we get the gods out there and we really see DC go to space, Marvel don't want that smoke, Shuby. They don't. They don't want that smoke. Green Lantern really is the boy. Captain Marvel stole all, like, that movie is Green Lantern.
You know, when we talk about the DC Marvel debate, I'm going to give Marvel their props. Marvel is owning movies.
They're killing it. They're on top.
A lot of my favorite movies I've seen this year, or, you know, two of them, are Black Panther and Infinity War. No doubt about it. Top 10. I don't know. Maybe both of them are going to be in the top 5 at the end of the year. We'll see. But DC is killing it in the TV realm. That's where I'm the most excited for. We've heard so many great things about what's cut to come in the DC Universe app, or I guess it's an app for me on Roku. But
let's talk about the final story, because I know you're about to.
Oh, well, yeah. Christmasina, shave your head, bro. Get ready.
For Victor's ass. I think that's perfect for Birds of Prey. It gives a henchman to Black Mask. And like I was telling you, remember how I said Black Mask was going to probably kidnap. They were probably going to have to save Cassandra Cain. But how does Huntress tie in? Why not have Victor's ass kill Black Mask send Victor's ass to kill Huntress's dad?
Yeah, that would work.
That's how I see it tying, man. And have Victor, and that's Huntress's tie to it. Or maybe have Victor's ass kill Black Panther. Something. We will see Victor's ass kill one of the main characters' family members. More than likely, it's going to be Huntress because of Helena Bertinelli.
Yeah, and I just think, since we're going with this gangster route on this film, Victor's ass is that perfect Batman villain for this, because he really has no super fantastical element. He's just a serial killer.
Yep.
And you know, it's very grounded.
Facts. And also, not, like you said, they learned their mistake from Suicide Squad by keeping humans, but also he's not a big name Batman villain. Like, yeah, Victor Zsasz has been in the games. Yeah,
And on the other hand, though, he's very well known right now.
See, that's what I was getting. He's not Mr. Freeze level known, but he's known well enough to where people be like, ooh, it's Zsasz. But he's not big enough to where it's like he has a power. He's, like you said, he's just a serial killer.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm excited that they're including Zsasz, and I don't know much about Christmasina, but as what I've come to discover with Mortal Engines, you don't really have to know who's in it to really like the movie. So
no, you're absolutely right. But let's get to that streaming service stuff, because like you said, I'm loving everything DC streaming service right now. Like, I want to see them build that universe out, because Titans has me sold.
Yeah, man, let's go to the next story on the DC streaming service. Joel McHale, best known for The Soup and The Joel McHale Show on Netflix.
Are you not going to say Community? Best known for The Soup. Everybody knows Joel McHale for The Community, bro.
I loved those shows. I thought those were great. Like, I am angry that he doesn't do it more on the reg, because I will watch reality TV or things on TV and think about it in that lens. Like, man, like if this was like an episode of The Soup, or like I'll see something happen and be like, man, that's going to be something that could be on The Soup. I remember, like, I used to watch that show religiously. Like, really? I love that show. But anyway, Joel McHale is going to be in Stargirl as Starman.
Interesting. I'm not going to be quick to judge, because, like, I don't know. Like we said, they're going for a lighter tone, where Titans is the darker one. Stargirl is more family-friendly. Joel McHale kind of fits that bill. So the Starman that I was thinking is probably not the Starman he's going to be. So I'm going to hold reserve and wait to see. I'm not gonna hate on it before I see something. You know what I mean?
All right. Yeah, Starman, for those who aren't too familiar, like myself, I'm not too familiar with the character, but he's a courageous and confident superhero. He's a member of the Justice Society of America. He wields a mysterious anti-gravity weapon called the Cosmic Staff, and has a longtime sidekick named Stripesy, who is better known as Courtney Whitmore's stepfather, Pat Dugan.
That's the robot.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's the one who's going to give Courtney the Cosmic Staff.
Yeah. And, you know,
I'm just saying, for those who've seen Justice League.
Yeah, for those who've seen Justice League and knows that she has that Cosmic Staff. But, yeah, so Starman, Joel McHale, a courageous, confident superhero. I think Joel McHale can play confident.
Like I said, I don't have too much to comment on this, because, like, I'm not gonna hate on it, because I don't I'm not a big Joel McHale guy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, there's a reason I didn't really mention Community. He's not my favorite character in that show. So I don't really know how he's gonna be in this acting role, but we are going for a lighter tone here, so I'm gonna give him the benefit of the doubt. I think it could go over pretty well.
100%.
I think he might embrace the role.
No, I agree with that 200%. But with that being said, let's get out of the world of superheroes. Let's get into the world of the kaiju. Yes, Godzilla King of Monsters has released the new trailer. Schubert, what did you think of this action-packed and unlike the first Godzilla movie where everybody was complaining, oh, we didn't get to see Godzilla, we didn't get to see a lot of the monsters, this movie is saying, nah, bro, this is the kaiju smackdown. Everybody's here. Let's rumble. What'd you think of the trailer?
Was I the only one who did not recognize Millie Bobby Brown right off the jump because she wasn't bald?
Oh, yeah, no, I didn't. I was like, I didn't know Millie Bobby Brown had, I thought she was a little girl, and I was like, man, she's growing up before our eyes. I was like,
she really is, yeah.
She looks real old in this one. Like, I was like, how old is she now? Like, I thought
she's like 14, I think, right?
I thought she was like 12, 13. I was like, there's no way this girl looks 15, 16 now.
Yeah. Kids grow fast, and then we'll find out one day, maybe.
We're getting old, man. But nonetheless, what'd you think of the trailer? Were you hyped? Because, like, I don't care about the actors. What made me happy was seeing the monsters.
Yeah, the monsters look hype. Mothra looks super dope.
King Deidre, I think that's his name, the three-headed dragon that's about to fight Godzilla. I'm ready to see that smackdown.
Yeah, I think this is going to be, you know, a big-time epic. Like, who cares about who's in this movie? Like, you could have gotten nobodies. We just want to see monsters fight.
Like, I don't care about Kyle Chandler. I don't care about O'Shea Jackson Jr. Charlie Day's back. Yeah, they're going to do all
Middle
that
ditch.
Stuff where they're going to do all that stuff where the humans are trying to either get Godzilla to fight for them, or they're going to try to, the humans are probably going to mess up and shoot a missile at one of the monsters. It's going to be that. I don't care about that. I'm going to see Godzilla fight all these other titans, and for King Kong at the end of this movie to be like, nah, F this. I'm coming fight you now. For Godzilla versus King Kong.
That's what we're setting up to, huh?
Yeah, that's exactly what they're getting ready to do after this.
Yeah, I'm glad they're bringing in the good old classic Godzilla villains and making them, you know, the great CGI and technology we have now. You know, I'm just overblown with the fact that Mothra looks so good. I loved my favorite Godzilla classic battle movie is Godzilla and Mothra. So I'm just super, super pumped for that.
No,
super Mothra pumped to see it on the big screen. I mean, something that you fantasize about.
Mothra looks super dope. What I'm interested to see is, will we ever get Mecha Godzilla? Because I love when they start bringing in Mecha Godzilla. Like, the Earthlings make their own version of Godzilla because they don't think they can control the Titans. So they're like, nah, we have a Mecha Godzilla. But then it turns evil. And Godzilla has to fight the evil robot.
Yeah, their evil robot turns evil. And they're like, Godzilla, save us.
Yeah, but that might be too corny nonetheless.
Yeah, maybe. I think that's a little bit too corny. Like, I think we're getting right to the right level of corny.
No, like, you might be right.
It's still corny, but it doesn't look corny, so it's going to pass.
But you know what does look corny?
What?
That Sonic.
Oh, my God. No. Oh, my gosh, dude. Yeah, so Sonic the Hedgehog, they have... What was that thing, like a motion poster is what they're calling it, that came out over the past week? The film's going to be produced by Deadpool director Tim Miller and Neil H. Morowitz. It's going to utilize a mixture of live action and CGI in order to bring Sonic and his teammates to life. When speaking to the movie's creative team, IGN was told that Sonic, voiced by Ben Schwartz, there's Ben Schwartz, finds himself in our present-day world, wherein he develops a relationship with James Marsden's Tom Wachowski and finds himself at odds with Jim Carrey's Dr. Robotnik, as expected, mayhem ensues. Jim Carrey as Dr. Robotnik, that's kind of interesting.
Look, man, I've seen so many. I don't know whether they're memes. I don't know whether they're real. There's been so many renditions of this Sonic after that motion picture. It all kind of scares me. I don't know why we can't do the classic, like, Space Jam, where we have our animated characters with live action where they're 2D. Like, nothing's wrong with having the characters as 2D with the live action. Looney Tunes and Space Jam showed it worked, and so did Who Framed Roger
Mary Ryan. Poppins.
Like, why can't we do that? But nonetheless, I will see how this goes, because that Pokemon movie has me a little intrigued, but I don't know if Sonic's looking like that.
Yeah, I feel like when we saw the Pokemon trailer and the Sonic look kind of looked similar to that, we were like, okay, we see this Pokemon trailer. We see that you're looking like it's going to be entertaining. We'll entertain this idea of these furry Pokemon. But this furry Sonic, I don't know.
I don't know, because then you know we got Tails and Knuckles. Like, how are they going
to look? Tails definitely has to be furry. It's a fox.
But Knuckles is a what?
It's a hedgehog.
No, he's an Incendia or something. I don't know what Knuckles is, something different, bro.
Yeah, man, I don't know how this is gonna work, man. I was not asking for a Sonic movie.
Me neither. And like, to say, damn, man, I feel bad for Tim Miller. Like, I want to see Tim Miller's Terminator. Like, where's that him and James Cameron at with that? Like, I don't care about this Sonic movie.
Yeah, I don't know why they're going with this. And, you know, we were just talking about Ben Schwartz doing Plastic Man. I don't know. Sonic?
Don't know why. I just wish Tim Miller would be doing something else post-Deadpool. Like, Deadpool was so successful. I want to see you go back into that action world. Like, I don't want to see you do some live-action animated Sonic movie. But who knows, Schubert? This might be – what if this is one of our favorite movies when the year comes out?
Yeah, I mean, I will admit there have been some movies that surprised me, and we'll get into that later, but I don't think that this is going to be one of those movies.
No, I kind of agree with you. But with that being said, let's get to the final news topic of the week. Jordan Peele's upcoming Nazi Hunter drama at Amazon called The Hunt has potentially found its lead. Logan Lerman is in talks to star in the drama series as Jonah Heidelbaum. When his grandmother is slain by a mysterious intruder in their apartment, Jonah sets out to track the culprit, only to find himself swept up into a mysterious organization known as The Hunt, a group of justice-seeking individuals dedicated to rooting out the Nazi murderers living in the U.S. under assumed identities. The series follows the diverse band of Nazi hunters living in 1977 New York City. They have discovered that hundreds of high-ranking Nazi officials are living among us and conspiring to create a Fourth Reich in the U.S. Amazon has ordered a 10-episode first season. As more details come out, we will give you them concerning a release date. But Schubert, this sounds interesting. I don't know if you ever played Wolfenstein, where
I really have.
Where the Nazis take over and pretty much it's them trying to win back America.
Is that a fun game?
No, it's super, super fun. I love that game.
Oh, cool.
This kind of sounds like what happened probably at the start of that game. And if the Hunt would have won, I kind of like that it's a period piece, also in 1977. So I'm excited for this.
Yeah, Amazon loves giving Nazis new life, man. Amazon just loves them some Nazis.
Don't they have Man in the High Castle?
Yeah.
Interesting. What do you think about this show?
I love World War II stuff. I'm always interested in things that kind of take a twist on what an Nazi-occupied world would be like in different time periods. So 1977 New York City, let's see what the Nazis would have looked like.
100%. I'm kind of with that. And let's see how it's saying
that they're going to take over in 1977. So that they have already kind of built this counterculture.
No, not that they're going to take over. It's that they're living in 1977 United
and
States.
And it's been the case since World War II that they're...
Yeah, they lost, and they're trying to undercover...
So it's almost exactly like Man in the High Castle.
They're trying to undercover build the Fourth Reich under the United States noses, but Logan...
Oh, so it's undercover...
Yeah, they're trying to build it on the low.
Okay. So
the Nazis are like terrorists, and Logan Lerman's group are like a bunch of spies coming to take out the terrorist Nazis.
Interesting. So yeah, this is kind of like more of Nazis trying to build up in that America. Time period. So like they're gonna have to be around the counterculture and disco and stuff like that.
Yep, and the being New York during the Coke era and the crack era, like. They're going to be I could see Jordan Peele doing some of that with the crack era of the 80s in New York City. I think he's going to put his own touch on it where he ties it to some of the political stuff going on today.
And this is post-civil rights.
Yep, it is.
That's kind of a crazy thing to think about, how Nazis would be reacting to seeing interracial relationships.
Yep, in a 1977 New York, because that is definitely happening in New York.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm really intrigued to see how this goes. It's definitely an interesting take on Nazis post-World War II and kind of a way that, like you're saying, could be in some way political, thinking about how this could be something that could actually happen.
Yeah, 100%.
I think that time period has probably faded out, but yeah, you get the point.
No, yeah, we get what you're saying. But Schubert, that's all we got for the news. Bring us into the box office breakdown, my brother.
Yeah, I kind of want to talk a little bit about that box office last week and see where the differences lie, because, you know, I didn't think there were going to be a lot of changes, but I was surprised to see that there was a bit of a shuffle.
Ooh, okay, what we got?
So last week we had number 5, Bohemian Rhapsody, number 4, Fantastic Beasts, number 3, The Grinch, number 2, Creed 2, number 1, Ralph Breaks the Internet. So coming in this week at number 5 is Fantastic Beasts.
Interesting. It slid down from 3.
Or actually, no. It's not. It's actually at 6. Number 5 is Bohemian Rhapsody.
So Fantastic Beasts slid all the way out of the top 5. And Bohemian Rhapsody held strong.
Yeah, Fantastic Beasts is out. Creed 2 moved from 2 to 4.
Ooh, interesting.
Ralph Breaks the Internet moved from 1 to 3.
We said Ralph was going to slide down.
Once Upon a Deadpool.
At 2, it
opened up earlier this week, so it's starting to gain some traction in these weekly box offices that I'm viewing.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, that's going to, once we, my prediction for next week is we're probably going to have Spider-Verse at number 1, number 2, Once Upon a Deadpool, and number 3, Mortal Engines.
I could co-sign that.
Maybe even Mortal Engines at 4 for this number 1, Dr. Seuss's The Grinch, which I've heard a lot of people have gone to see this week.
Now that it's Christmas time?
Yeah.
We said that last week, man, so I wouldn't be surprised. But after seeing Mortal Engines, I know I'm going to see Spider-Verse on Saturday. I'm going to hit the double feature like Schubert did today. I'm going to go Spider-Verse and Aquaman. But Mortal Engines, I wouldn't be surprised if it did get 3, because our theater had a good bit of people to say it was Thursday night at 10 o'clock.
Yeah, I would... Yeah, Thursday night, 10 o'clock. I probably had, I'd say, 7 to 10 people in there. That's not that bad. It's a smaller theater, too.
I'd say I had between 10 and 20, and you know the 16 is not bad. That's the one of two theaters in Lafayette.
Yeah, so it might be getting some traction. I actually, and once we go, I'll just save it for when we talk about it, because I think their marketing was actually pretty genius.
Oh, interesting. See, I kind of disagree with you. So we'll
I think it's genius in the way.
We'll get to that. We'll get to it.
Yeah.
But is that the box office?
That's the box office. Number one, The Grinch.
100%. Well, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we don't really have a discussion today. So our discussion is us talking about our movies on the rise and what those are, if you haven't guessed it, Spider-Verse and Mortal Engines. So with that being said, it is time for the Movie on the Rise. We're going to give you our picks. It's the Movie on the Rise. We're going to give you our flicks. It's the Movie on the Rise. It's the Movie on the Rise. I'm trying something new, man. I'm trying to get my voice right, you know, put that auto-tune on it, get it fire. Shuby, Movie on the Rise, brother.
I wish I could you do yours. But I have to do Into the Spider-Verse.
That's only because I didn't get to see it. If I'd have saw it, you know, I'd have probably picked Spider-Verse.
Probably. I think Spider-Verse was great. It's probably going to fall more into your forte, being a big comic book fan, because it's solely in on comics. It almost kind of made me want to see more movies made this way for comic books.
Ooh, interesting. That's what a lot of people are saying, like, if you're going to do an animated feature on the big screen in the superhero world, let's make it really look like a comic book. That's something that I've heard that Spider-Verse has done really well.
It did do that. And on the flip side, there were times where I couldn't tell that it was animated.
Ooh, interesting.
Like, the animation is so interesting and different that it flirts with looking real and looking fake. Like, that's, it's crazy. It's crazy. Like, you can obviously tell some of it's, like, art and painted and animated and stuff like that. But they're just, like, some scenes, especially when it gets darker, like, some of the darker, destructive scenes. It looked like I was really in rubble, man. Like, I could barely tell that it was fake.
Interesting. I mean, what about the story?
The story's great. Really, it's shorter movie than Mortal Engines. It's just under 2 hours. So it's a little bit compacted, it doesn't really explore some of those side characters as much as I really would have wanted to know more. But that's just curiosity. I don't think it really needed to be touched upon. I think they did what they needed to do. I like tight movies. I like movies that don't have too big of lulls. There really wasn't a lull in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. It kind of... bam, 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 bam. We're moving. We're getting through it. Miles is learning stuff. Miles is learning stuff about being Spider-Man. He's learning stuff about being a teenager. He's learning about being a man. Like, he's learning. He learned so much. It's a great coming-of-age story on top of an animated family film, on top of a superhero film, on top of introducing an entire multiverse of Spider-Man that can totally extend the Sony Spider-Verse.
100%. See, that's where I was going to go two questions next, and you kind of touched on both where I was going to go. First one, with there being so much Spider-Man extra characters where everybody's like, ooh, we want to know about Noir Spider-Man, we want to know about Spider-Ham, we want to know about Spider-Gwen, we want to know about the Big Hero 6 Spider-Man, like the Japanese girl, I believe her name's Yuki, we want to know about all them.
Yes, but her name is Penny Parker.
Oh, Penny Parker. Is this really Miles' story?
Yes.
Okay, cool. And I
100% Miles' story. 100% Miles' story.
How much does Peter play into it?
Huge, but there's not all just one Peter Parker, and there's two Peters that kind of play a role for him, which I don't really want to get into that because it's, you know, spoilers. Spoiler. Because, like, okay, you know, Chris Pine is also Peter Parker.
Ooh, and don't say anymore because I know exactly who that he plays because it got spoiled for me.
So
yeah, we don't even have to say anymore about that. Let me get into my next question. Being that Sony's announced that not only they're doing the sequel to Spider-Verse, but they're doing the female animated team from this universe. They're doing all kind of, they're going to make this animated universe boom. Do you think it's possible after seeing Spider-Verse? And are you interested in seeing a Spider-Verse 2, a Spider-Gwen with all the other Spider females team up? Are you interested to see where they go with this animated universe?
Yeah, man, I think that they created a new franchise. Like, I almost am, I'm cool with what Tom Holland is doing in the MCU, and I understand, like, I love the MCU as much as, not everyone, but as most people, and I want to see Spider-Man in the MCU, but I would almost be satisfied if this was the Spider-Man I got for the rest of my life.
Interesting. So you, like, prefer the anime. See, and we're not saying that these Spider-Men are going to become live action in the Venom stuff. No, we're talking strictly this animated universe. You'd be fine if that's how you got the rest of Spider-Men for the rest of your life.
Yeah, because, I mean, even the Peter Parker version of, you know, adult Spider-Man looked great. It looked great. And I was really attached to Miles, though. Like, that's the thing, man. Like, I really think that I want to know more about him, man. I want to know more about... Like, they gave you a great new, different origin for him that, you know, that I really kind of felt, and you could really get attached to that character. And his villains are the same, but they're different because it's a different Spider-Verse. Like, his Doc Ock is an old man. So there's a whole different version of these Spider-Man characters in Miles' world that I want to get to know. And I want to really dive into Miles's New York and his Earth and his stuff. I mean, he, at the end of the movie, he becomes his own Spider-Man, and it makes you want to follow along with him to his next adventure that it kind of open-endedly leaves open.
What, did you stay for the post-credit scene?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. I don't want to say it, but I love that Spider-Man character as well. But nonetheless, yeah, I'm super excited to see this. A lot of credit goes to Brian Michael Bendis because he helped create Miles Morales in the comic book universe. He was the one who rebooted Spider-Man. Everybody's like, how you reboot Spider-Man? But we got Miles Morales.
Yeah, love that he's not only African-American, but he's also Latino.
Hispanic. Yeah, and he's LGBTQ. I don't know what? If they touched on in the comics he is.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, they kind of hinted that he would have romantic relationships with women.
Interesting. Well, in the comics,
that could always flip around. I mean, he's at this point, he's in middle school, so.
Yeah, that could always change. 100%. Yeah. But glad you enjoyed that, Shubi. I wish I'd have got to see it so we could have talked more about it. I could have got super comic book nerdy. But let's switch to my movie on the rise. And I think you guys should go see both of these because, like Shubi said, that movie I know is great. Some people are already saying that's the best animated movie of the year.
It's going to win the Oscar, man. It's going to a bank on it. Like, if I'm sorry, but if you see this movie and you liked The Incredibles 2 over this movie, then I don't want to talk to you.
Real. That's like, what I was...
Because, I mean, I wasn't honestly a big Incredibles 2 fan, so I understand where everyone's coming from, because it probably was good. I just, for me, when I fall asleep during a movie, that's enough for me to be like, nope.
No, I agree. That's why I don't like the first Guardians. Everybody can shit on me for saying I don't like the first Guardians, but that movie put me to sleep. I'm sorry.
So,
I can't rock with a movie that puts me to sleep.
So, yeah, I think what Spider-Verse did in the animated world as well with its animation also changed the entire game, like Pixar did back then.
Some people are saying this is Marvel's Batman Mask of the Phantasm. What Batman Mask of the Phantasm did in the early 90s, 2000s, some people are saying this is what Marvel's doing. All right, not Marvel. Sony. What Sony's doing to animation right now.
Yeah, I think Sony's completely changing the game.
I would, and since Sony's doing this, I would love to see, because we all know who's the king of television in superheroes. We all know who's the king of animation in superheroes. And I want to see, because their animation quality is kind of dipped, and I love their 2D style. But let's be honest, DC, as the death of Superman, hasn't been as popping as Justice League War or some of the other ones. So I want to see DC step up their animation game to kind of match a little bit of the Spider-Verse stuff.
Yeah, for sure. And saying with Marvel's TV, the only cartoon that really landed for me in Marvel world was Spider-Man. So, I mean, I feel like he's the perfect animated person.
The early 90s one?
Yeah.
You didn't like the X-Men one either?
I liked it, but, I mean, we're trying to figure out what we're doing with X-Men. I'd rather see X-Men live action than I would cartoon.
No, same. No, you're absolutely right. It's time that we get the X-Men live action right, where we get actual costumes.
Like, we've had the first series got some of it right. The second series also got some of it right, but they didn't get all of it right.
Yeah, like, the first series got some the team dynamic stuff right, but it didn't get the look right. The second series got the team dynamic and some of the look right, but it didn't get the villains, and they didn't bring in the characters that we saw from the first series. They had a new set of characters that they got right, but when they got the old characters, they didn't really get them right.
Well, that's the thing. Like, Days of Future Past was probably the best X-Men that we've ever had, because it kind of gave you the new and the old, and it's my favorite X-Men by far. And then behind that, I would probably have to go with one of the earlier X-Men.
Interesting. So. See, I go Days of Future Past to First Class. First Class to me is masterful.
I think First Class would probably be right there with me, 3, 4. I just have to give credit where credit's due to that series, because they also did a lot right. So it's like I choose the number one from that, the new version, and the top one from the old version, I guess, for me is X2, yeah.
Yeah, there's got to be the second one. So I'm not about to let you say X1 is better than First Class. I'll give you X2 maybe, but I ain't giving you X1.
Just saying X2 for the fact that, you know, that's the best one out of those.
No, for sure. Let's talk Mortal Engines. So I want to talk about the marketing, because we both went into it before we even get into the story or anything. Me and my old lady went, and she didn't know anything about it. I showed her the trailer before. She didn't know anything after watching that trailer. I didn't really know anything after watching the trailer. And you guys have been hearing me on this podcast. I don't know. I didn't know what to expect from Mortal Engines, but I loved it. But I kind of wish when it was
intriguing.
Yes, but when it was marketed as a trilogy. It's at least to me, it seemed like, oh, this is the new book series that's gonna be in the vein of Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings. Like, it's that new franchise. And when we get into the story, you come to find out that this could be a one and done, or it could be a sequel. And I don't know if it was marketed the right way. I wish it would have been marketed as a one and done.
Yeah, I don't know if I felt like it was even supposed to be marketed as a franchise. I guess you could have seen it maybe that way. What I liked about the marketing...
Just because they did the Peter Jackson stuff. They went heavy on that.
What I liked about the marketing was that it made it so vague.
It did.
That when you got in there, you were like, man, like, I got no opinions. Let's see how this goes. And
do you think that worked?
It worked for me. I don't know if it's going to work for everybody.
And see, and that's another thing. I don't know if that's going to work. I don't know if that's going to translate into money. Like, word of mouth is what I think. We're going to see Mortal Engines 6. Like, I think Mortal Engines might not have the best first weekend. Like, when we come back next week and we find Mortal Engines might be sitting at 3 or 4. But I think Mortal Engines will be sitting at 3 or 4 for a couple weeks.
Like, yeah.
I think word of mouth is going to pick up.
Yeah, I really hope it does. Because even though it's, you know, they've been able to talk about this for a while, and it's just kind of floated to the wayside behind Spider-Verse and Mary Poppins and Vice
Aquaman.
And Aquaman. So, you know, I really want people to start talking about it, because it was exactly what I was looking for in a movie
100%.
This year.
I agree.
I'd been sitting going through Netflix for months now, being like, man, you know, I just really want a good standalone action sci-fi fantasy movie that is completely different than anything and not cheesy. And gives me action, gives me drama, gives me story, gives me characters I can really invest in. Man, that movie blew me away. It really did.
I thought it was a great movie, man. Like, look, I thought that it had great elements from a lot of sci-fi stuff. I thought
it did.
Some anime. Like, I thought it had anime vibes. I thought it had some Lord of the Rings, some Star Wars. I thought it had a little bit of everything.
And I thought it chose the right ones, too.
Yeah, no, it definitely did. Some of the characters where you get the action, because if you watch the trailers, you're like, where does the action come from? Is this about to be some meta anime stuff where these cities are about to fight? Yes and no. you get the action from actually some of the heroes inside of the story, and I really liked it. I don't really want to talk on too much story points because I kind of want you guys, the listeners, to go into it kind of like how me and Shuby did, so you can make your own interpretations. But I will say the main character, the Asian female, I forget her name in the story. She was my favorite character in the whole movie.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because I was going to say the same thing.
Her, and I also love the villain, who is Peter Jackson's guy from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. He's Hugo Weaving.
Hugo Weaving and that Asian actress, the lady,
she's can't new. Think
of her name. Her, both of them were my favorite. Like, yeah, the girl and the dude, Tom and
I liked them too.
They were all right, but I was Hugo Weaving and that Asian woman. I love them. Let's get it.
Yeah, her name's like Jai Hay.
Miss Hay, I appreciated everything you did, and she kind of brought those anime, like,
it's one word, her. Like Jai Hay, like one word.
Interesting. Like, well, Miss Jai Hay, I dug it. So give us some of the other things that you dug about this movie. She were pros, cons, give them out.
Opening scene was great. Don't want to get too much into it. I liked how we really kind of moved from person to person. Very ominous. Like, at one point I was like, who am I rooting for here? Like, I don't know, I don't want to go into like too many details, but in the beginning, like, did you have that wondering, like, okay, well, I really like this character, but I'm also know that I should like this character, but I don't know about her intentions at the moment. Like, I felt like I was reading the book and it was unfolding before my eyes, but I haven't read this book. I just felt like I was learning the story along with the thing. And I guess what was refreshing to me about that is with a lot of the stuff that we love and talk about, you know, Star Wars, superhero movies, like, I know a lot about all of that. And this was like a world that I had no knowledge about. And
no, same.
Like, and to know that it was America in the future.
Yeah.
Made it even more intense for me.
Like, it nailed some of my, like, that's what I love in anime, some of the post-apocalyptic future stuff, and it nailed some of that heavy. And like you said, some of the characters, for example, you didn't know who to root for, and it felt like when I thought it would zig, it would zag.
Exactly, yes.
It left you very, you couldn't predict this movie.
No, that's how I loved about it. Like, I'm like, oh, okay, well, they're probably going to do this. And usually in the movies I've seen this year, they do that.
Yeah.
Like, but what I found from watching movies every week is that, you know, I've kind of starting to see them in a different lens. And you can kind of predict and see the tropes. And here I could see the tropes. I didn't predict them, but I thought they picked the right ones.
And yeah, I thought they did a good job with them.
That was a good pull from that. Like that, and some of their jokes, like they made jokes within it, and I thought were really funny, and they landed in my theater.
Some of my cons, I will say, there was one that I think you're talking about where it's a joke where it pulls to like today kind of. I thought it was very early in the movie. It was very, very early in the movie where it's like they're walking in the city. In the museum, more specifically. In the
museum, yeah.
I that didn't land for me. It kind of pulled me out, low-key.
Oh, man, no.
That's the only thing. And then also the one trope, and I'm not going to say it because it spoils the movie, but the trope at the end, Schubert, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I didn't like it.
You have to tell me off air because I was...
You don't know?
Yeah, because I kind of wanted to come in talking about some of the stuff at the end, but obviously I don't want to ruin it. It's hard because man, I don't want to ruin it for everyone because I want you guys to see it. It was just a really well done film.
No, we spoil a lot when it comes to Titans, and we're probably going to spoil Aquaman for you guys, low key. But I'm not going to spoil this because this is something that like you guys really should go into not knowing anything. Just know that you guys should go see this movie because it's really dope.
Yeah, I mean, that was the key to it, is like the fact that you really didn't know anything was perfect. And, you know, we talk about movies adapted from books, and we've done it on this podcast already. But a lot of them are done super bad. Like, let's put Maze Runner, for example. Maze Runner, as much as I enjoyed some of the films and some of the qualities of the films, they weren't good movies. In the most part, they weren't good. Divergent, same way. Hunger Games is an example of one that was done pretty well. But that's even a franchise where we don't know how this is going to be a franchise or not. Like, I think this was the perfect book movie.
Oh yeah, no, this could have been this movie. After you guys see this movie, you're going to understand what we mean by this. This movie could either go one of two ways. It could be a franchise, and I have no idea what they're going to do in the sequel. Absolutely no idea. I could maybe guess where they go, but some of those routes may be corny, which I don't think they're going to do. But this movie could be one-off, and I'd be A-OK if this was the only Mortal Engines movie, and that's it.
Yeah, I think with the way that they built the world, you could move around in it to where you could tell other stories within it. Because, like, it's really kind of focuses in on London, but there's other cities out there.
Yeah, that's true.
And I'm wondering what they're doing. Like, I was really kind of interested that we never saw another big city. Like, I would have loved to see London come upon one of the other massive cities, let's say Paris or something, you know, and see what that would have been like.
If they do a sequel, I mean, America, show us. You got to.
Yeah, especially because they had so much American ties into it, where a lot of the jokes especially were American.
And a lot of the key parts of the movie connected to America.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's something that I'd be interested in. But yeah, Shubi, man, these are our movie on the rises, brother.
Yeah, man, these are great. Fantastic weekend.
Fantastic weekend for movies. And we get to cap it off by seeing Aquaman a week early. I'm excited. Man, I can't wait for Saturday.
Yeah, Aquaman, super pumped about it. I think it's going to be great. I think I might have seen three of my favorite movies of the year this week. Giving Aquaman some you know, high standards there, some high stakes to live by. But
I think it's going to pull through for us, man.
But man, did I like these two movies today.
No, I agree. It'll be very interesting when we do. I was actually, to give a little insight, I was getting ready for our end of the year episodes, the Bros Who Binge Awards, and getting ready for the Bros Who Think end of the year full staff finale special. And I was doing my top five movie list, and I had number one. Number one's easy. I know what number one is. It's after number one that, like, everything gets hard.
Yeah, because there's a lot of things that you're like, oh, man, you're like, that's good. I may not put it in my top three, but I'd like to put it in at four and five. And then you have, like, three or four of those that you're like, yeah, that would be good at four or five. And you're like, crap.
I can't put those at three or two.
Yeah, it's just, like, one of these things where, like, let me see if I can think of one as an example, because I have several that I have at my outskirts. Shoot, Solo. Like, Solo for me. I liked Solo. But did I like it as much as some of the really good things that came out this year? I don't know.
Schubert, there's no way Solo's making your top five.
Well, it's a personal top five.
That is true. You think he's gonna make it?
After this weekend, probably not.
Cause I know we probably both have the same number one.
Yeah, I don't want to say too many of, like, the bigger named ones. That's why I mentioned Solo, because I just don't think that's going to make the cut. But that's, like, an example of, like, a movie that I really enjoyed this year that I don't think is going to make the cut for me.
Oh, okay. I see where you're going with it.
Because I don't want to spoil it, you know?
No, I feel, yeah, we're not spoiling it. But I feel you why you did choose Solo. That's one of the ones that, like, yeah, it's on the outs. Like, it was a 2018 movie that I liked, but is it good enough to make the cut? Like, for example, for me, like, as much as I love this movie, I don't know if it's going to make the cut. Creed 2, I don't know if it's going to make the cut.
Ooh, yeah. See, that's what I was wondering. I thought that maybe Creed 2 is going to be really high for you.
See, I don't know. When we break it down, like, and see, the crazy thing is I'd say I know what our number ones are, but after seeing the list of 2018 movies, I saw another movie that fans may think could both be our number ones, that I'm like, damn, that movie could be number one, but I know what my number one is. But nonetheless, yeah, Shubi, let's not spoil anymore for the upcoming weeks.
Yeah, we're definitely excited for what's to come in the upcoming weeks. What you can expect next week on Bros Who Binge is all Christmas. Of course, we will have some news here and there, but I don't think there's going to be too much big news coming out. We're going to talk about Aquaman. We're going to talk about Christmas. It's going to be fun times.
And Titans. Because the penultimate, this is the second to last episode.
We are at a cliffhanger, so we're trying to figure out what's going on.
So it's basically going to be a DC Christmas episode.
It's a DC Christmas, everybody. It sounds like our kind of Christmas, right, Lyndon?
Pretty much. If we could throw a little holiday special cheer for your Star Wars, it'll be A-OK.
Oh, I will say, you know, we mentioned that Deadpool made it into the box office. Go out and see it. It does support cancer research.
100%.
So that's something I definitely want to try and do this weekend is go catch old Fred Savage on Once Upon a Deadpool.
Worst case scenario, I'm going to go on Super Saver Tuesdays.
Exactly.
Yep. So is it time to give out the socials, my guy?
Yeah, man. Go ahead.
All right. You guys can follow me on at Berlin the Don on Twitter, at Young Willie Beeman on Instagram. Follow the Bros Who Think at Bros Who Think on Twitter. And be sure to check out this week's new main episode, episode 76 of the Bros Who Think podcast. Super, super dope. Be sure to check out episode 36 of Primetime. Me and Charles talk Saints, Pels, LSU. Also, for anime fans, if you didn't check out the newest episode of Anime Talk, be sure to check it out because the next episode of Anime Talk, you guys, I've been telling Schubert about, I've been planning this for months. And I'm so excited to end the year with this, anime fans. Look, I'm not going to spoil it today, but when the new episode of Anime Talk drops, you guys are in for a treat. Like, I am super excited about the guests we got on, and we worked really hard to get this done, so I'm really excited for you guys to check this out. Also, like I said on Bros Who Think, we're going to have a Hero Mask review. I'm going to have a review for you guys on the website as an article. If not, by the time you hear this, it'll be up Monday morning. Just give me a little time because we're working on some other stuff for the network. But I'm going to get that review out for you guys for the Netflix's Hero Mask. But other than that, you guys have a great weekend. I can't wait to talk movies with you next time. And I love that. I was so mad when Avengers Endgame dropped that trailer after we dropped this episode. I pray to God there is nothing that drops when
Spider-Man,
you guys see this
Spider-Man, watch it.
We're calling it. Let's say, all right, I'm with
you. Because Spider-Verse just came out.
Yep, no, I'm with you. And if it's not Spider-Man, it's going to be Shazam.
A newer one?
A new Shazam trailer, yep.
I feel
that. Gosh, that's going to piss me off. But yeah, Shubi, thanks for having me again, brother.
Well, that's it for episode 20 of the Bros Who Binge podcast. Make sure you listen to everything in the Bros Who Think umbrella on broswhothink.com. I'm Adam Schubert for Lyndon Burton. As always, keep binging.
Oh, I think I'm going under. I think I'm in over.